The following podcast reflects the views and opinions of the hosts and guests only. They do not reflect the views or opinions of any agency or specific members of an association. At times, colorful language may be used and may be unsuitable for people under the age of 18. Discretion is advised. Take me out to the ball game, PPA member. Steve Graham is president of LVPPA here, as always, with my man, Dan.
Dan Coyne, treasurer of the LVPPA.
Treasurer extraordinaire. He keeps us on pace with where we need to be. He takes care of the money, makes sure that I can live this extravagant lifestyle driving my 1986 Hyundai Accent.
Great year.
Great year. 86 is a great year. A lot of things happened in the 80s. But we're out here at Aviators Ballpark. We just kicked off the season. This past Tuesday with the Aviators, we did our annual or our usual baseball game with our members. We had about 200 some odd members with their families come in. And so we said, hey, the season's getting ready to start. Let's do our next podcast out here. So we got a great show today. We're going to talk with Jim Gemma, a media relations person with the Aviators, talk a little bit about what's to come with the Aviators. Some of you have asked questions about what happens if the A's come here. Do the Aviators have to leave? Can the A's come here? He's going to address that. And then to close the show, we're going to bring in our sheriff, who just recently got our endorsement for the governor's race. And Joe's going to come on here. Joe Lombardo is going to come on and have a discussion, as well as look at appointing Dan to a specific position.
Wildlife commissioner. I've heard from the rumors I'm top of the list right now, so we'll see. It's a tough question for him. I know he doesn't want to commit before he's elected, but I think I'm a shoo-in on it.
I think that, you know, if you just wear on him a little bit, you know, similar to our newly endorsed sheriff candidate, Kevin McMahill, you know, the first time we did a Q&A, he didn't even want to talk about an undersheriff. No. We wore him in a little bit, and then he started talking a little bit about Andy Walsh. I think this is the same. Like, this may be the first interview.
Keep chipping away.
We bring him back in the summer. You're moving. That list is really right up there. He probably just doesn't want to admit it, that he's already had you in mind.
Yeah, he's a modest guy, and you know, I wouldn't want to show my cards either before.
But no doubt about it. I'm sure some folks, like, you know, at the jail or working at HQ, think they're in line for that spot. In reality, it's probably you.
We're also going to talk to the Aviators about possibly having a prospect pitcher coming up.
A lot of good. They got a young man named Allen that they're really high on. They traded for a kid with that's going to play catcher for him that they think is going to come up, but there's a good shot, and you guys will be shocked to hear how this could unfold to have me working an inning or one out of an inning against one of the upcoming teams. And I'm ready, Dan. I'm ready. The shoulder feels good. The elbow feels good.
The president and the pitcher.
You know, that's how we do things here. You know, treasurer and wildlife commissioner. You know what I mean? There's nothing we can't do. So next up, we're going to have Jim with the Aviators Media Relations. We're going to have a good show. We're here with Jim Gemma, Media Relations Director for our Aviators, formerly the 51s, formerly the Stars, formerly something before that. I don't know what we were, but we're the Aviators now. And Jim, we appreciate you coming on to the show with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. No, you're right. Stars, the 51s, to Aviators, and this is our 40th calendar season. It's hard to believe back in 1983, we started at Cashman Field.
Wow, 83, a great year.
'86. Okay. Yeah. It's a lethal action type of year over there. I remember going out to Cashman for the ball games, and a lot of the talk about Cashman was it was just in a rather less than popular part of town that people kind of wouldn't want to go down there. The transition up here, how's the transition been? How does attendance been? I think you guys set a record in your first year, didn't you?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right about Cashman. Back in 1983, Las Vegas was such a small town, and that was kind of the center of town. You know, time goes by, but that was a really good facility in its day. But now, where we're sitting now, we have the nicest facility in all of minor leagues, and we led all of minor league baseball in attendance in 2019 of 650,934. Wow. We have that, you know.
Are you sure?
Memorized
on that number?
Because
are you sure on that number, Jim? Well, like you were a little ballparking.
That figure, I mean, that's a hard figure to get. But last year, you know, we had 100% June on, so we led AAA West in attendance with 400 plus thousand, and that was the second highest total we ever had. So no, it's going great up here. It's just a great area.
So I just saw on the news, correct me if I'm wrong, something that a promotion that you guys are doing, you're bringing back, there used to be the dollar beer night at the 51s. You guys are bringing back a $2 beer night due to inflation, but yeah, what nights are we going to have that on? What's a beer selection? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, a lot of minor leagues do $2 beer nights, but in 2019, we did that, but it's back in full force again this year, which is a good thing. That's, you know, part of minor league baseball. It's kind of a corny slogan, affordable family fun, but it is. We're the only pro team in town that has free parking, so we'll always have our niche here. But yeah, $2 beer night's a popular thing. I think it kind of fluctuates between Coors Light and some nice beers.
I think Jesus drank Coors Light. That's why I drink Coors Light.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's we at the PPA, we've been partners with the organization since Cashman. And the folks at this organization were always solid for us. We do a lot of partnering with people. Some people value our partnership. Some maybe not so much. But you guys have always been aces for us when it comes to accommodating, getting our people, honestly, not
mascots to our events.
And not destroying us on pricing. You know, you moved to the new ballpark. You guys could have been very well versed to jack the pricing up to, you know, 50 to 100% of what it was. And that hasn't happened here. And I'll tell you, to anyone who's wondering about the park, is even here when it's hot, especially because it's so far west, as the sun starts to work. Now, midday, listen, it is what it is. You know, you're not going to hide from it anywhere. But when it's July and 7:30 hits and that sun starts to hit the mountain, it's beautiful out here. And we always set up on the third base line in that suite. And we just, it's one of the most heavily requested events for our membership out of everything between the Golden Knights, UNLV football. It is because what you said, it's family fun. You can bring the kids, their wives, their husbands, their whomever, and they can just have a great time.
Yeah, you're right. It is cooler up here, and the seats we have is what the Atlanta Braves have in the stadium seats. They really are 30 to 40 degrees cooler. They're mesh seats, and it really does help being up here by Red Rock Canyon. And absolutely, it helps being up here. It's like 3,000 feet here, or downtown, it's like, it was 2,400. It doesn't sound like a big difference, but it is cooler up here at night.
Yeah, the course can stay blue up is good.
Just like the Rockies.
Bingo.
What, Jim, what are your expectations for this season? How are you going to do?
Yeah, we're in our first homestand right now, but, you know, the Athletics made some trades, Oakland. We do have some quality players here. We'll see how it plays out. A lot of it's always dictated with how many injuries or call-ups there is with the big league club, but we have the shortstop's kind of our marquee player, Nick Allen. He was a silver medalist in the summer games last year for Team USA, which is something he'll always carry with him the rest of his life. Awesome. But he should be up with the A's at some point this year, but he's kind of our marquee player.
That's always the tough thing when you get a really good minor league team doesn't stay really good for long, because those kids will get called up, and now all of a sudden one of your key players or positional guys. But that's where the whole farm system comes in, right? Then the double-A kid comes up, and he should be producing or at least playing just as well. Who other than Allen is an up-and-comer? Who would we be looking at to get an autograph or a baseball card and hold it?
Well, the Matt Olson trade, the catcher from Atlanta, Shea Langeliers, he's the A's number two top prospect. He's the real deal. He's a really good player that fans will like to see. And, you know, via the trade with the Braves, Christian Pache, he's up playing with Oakland. But and then the other trade with Matt Chapman, Zach Logue, who pitched the first night, he's a left-hander. He pitched with AAA Buffalo last year. He looked real good on opening night. So that's someone for the fans to look at. And Parker Dungey, who pitched at Wake Forest, he's in like his third or fourth year with the AAA part. He had a little arm trouble last year, but he pitched really well the other night.
Nice. How accessible are players? If kids, if the game's at 7, is there a time the kids can come and get a picture, get an autograph? What's the best time to do that before a game?
Yeah, thank goodness things have backtracked a little bit from last year. These guys were in strict. They really couldn't do anything. Now they're still kind of restricted to the clubhouse, but I already saw players, if if you know the kids are down there, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes before the game, that's when they come out and start stretching. They'll do their best to go to the rail and sign some things. And we're just so happy it's kind of eased up some. Thank goodness.
What our members have been asking a lot about, and you know, a lot of rumors in the community, how if the A's came here, opening that club up, how would that affect you guys?
Yeah, in the past, it was cut and dried where the AAA team would relocate. It's kind of changed now because you have AAA Gwinnett. I was thinking about that before. There's like three of them. AAA Gwinnett, which is a AAA affiliate of the Braves. They're probably 45 minutes from Atlanta. St. Paul Saints, AAA affiliate of the Twins. They're right in the same area as Sugarland Space Cowboys. That's a great name. AAA affiliate of the Astros. They're literally 15 minutes from Minute Maid Park. So
the Sugarland Space Cowboys?
They just changed it. It was the Sugarland Skeeters, which was actually a great logo, great the mosquito.
I need a hat. Sugarland Space Cowboys. Come on. That's an amazing team. Can the Aviators buy that name?
Only wear
Las Vegas Space Cowboys. That sounds good, actually. But that's something they'll cross that situation when it happens. That's still years away, but it is a hypothetical. It was cut and dried where the team would leave. Now it's something where, I mean, it's likely that this would stay here. So especially if the A's move here. I mean, it may not be the A's, maybe someone else down the road.
So two questions, and I'll just go back to back with them. One, how is the, we always have a lot of our officers working overtime here. Historically, back at Cashman, Dollar Beer Night brought out a lot of problems. What's the relationship like? How's the appreciation from the Aviators for our officers?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say Don Logan, our president, COO, and I can back that up. We have always been longtime fans of Metro. From my brother was on the force for a long time. He went to school with Billy Young at Gorman. Sheriff Lombardo's great. We've always had high praise for Metro. They, at times, seeing what my brother had to go through, it's a thankless job, and we're always 100% supportive of Metro. It's always great seeing the police here every night. Sometimes that'll deter somebody if they want to act like a jerk. They'll probably think twice if they see a couple Metro officers here. But it is a different clientele here than downtown Las Vegas at the time. But it's always great when they're out here, especially nights like $2 beer night. There's not a lot of issues.
Yeah. So what other promotional events are you doing here? I saw the $2 beer night. You got fireworks going off this week. What are some of the other things we're doing this season?
Yeah, it's really helped since now we're about as normal as you can get. I don't think it's ever going to be totally normal, but we, on our website, aviatorslv.com, we're up to almost 60 promotion nights. Firework Friday, $2 beer night. We finally can get back to some of our t-shirt nights, jersey nights, and a bobblehead night sprinkled in now and then. We're going to have a Star Wars night, a couple Marvel nights. Nice. We have to get approval with MLB and all that stuff, but yeah, if they go to aviatorslv.com, our fans, our promotional list is on there. We have a lot of promotion nights, but that's the Avianza Minor League Baseball.
Good. So I'm sure the club has talked a lot about it. The jersey I have was from back in 2019. I threw out the first pitch, and after I threw the heat, a lot of people started, hey, do you still have enough in the tank, Steve? And so, I kept the arm fresh. I keep it iced. And so the question that my members want to know is there a possibility of seeing Steve Grammas on the mound starting an inning in a game? I'm ready to go. My fastball's up to 68. It's an off speeder, but they don't expect it. So chances of me starting a ball game.
Get the breaking ball down.
It's always a possibility in AAA because you can have like five guys get called up in one day. If there's a trade
about
or something,
as much of a chance you may have a wildlife chance. Commissioner.
So, you never know.
So if single A loses all their pitchers in a traffic accident, they just get injured. Yes. They're okay. They're going to make it. There's not a game.
Good.
Double A has people that they all get the flu for a week, and Triple A has five call-ups. You're saying that there's a chance you see me.
You better be ready at that point. Yes.
Listen, you heard it here first, and there's no reason to lie. His brother was in law enforcement.
That's right.
Sister-in-law is law enforcement.
That's right.
And so the straight shooter. So good chance you're going to see me out on the mound, and I'm going to do it for free. I'm not going to charge anybody.
Oh,
you know what I mean? I'm a giver. That's what we do.
There's always negotiation.
The A's would love that because obviously, the players get paid by the Oakland A's because they're Oakland A's employees, part of the player development agreement. So the A's would probably like they don't have to pay.
I'm his agent on this one.
Yeah, yeah. I can't hit though, and I can't pitch past the first batter.
Yeah.
But if we get all that down, first out of the game is on me. Jim, we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We love the Aviators. We absolutely love being out here. It's a beautiful park. You guys are building something really good that we hope stays in our community for a long time, and we appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. That was a great interview with Jim. A lot of good information there about that prospect, especially you were talking about.
I think people are going to be pumped up about $2 beer night and then the prospect.
They're going to have to probably drink about 20 $2 beers to want a stomach watching me on the mound in a uniform because I'm a high calf type of pant guy and very tight form-fitting jersey.
You know, with the carb-free diet you've been rocking. And the jujitsu on the
I haven't,
think it's gonna look good.
I haven't had dairy or carbs in 2 months, and I know a lot of you are looking at me going, well, then that diet doesn't work because you're still large. But
I don't think people realize with like people who are happily married and committed like us, we keep our bodies like looking like this to make our wives feel more secure.
It's a reason.
So we know that we wouldn't be, you know, girls knocking down our door, you know, when we go out.
I live by a motto, and I coined this. It's called C over T equals R. Consistency over time equals results. And I got a buddy in the jiu-jitsu game that likes to use that. He's actually going to try and brand it on a jiu-jitsu gi. I'm getting lawyers involved. He doesn't know it yet.
Before he actually trademarks it, I can trademark and give you guys a decent price for it.
I like that. And you know what? Speaking of some rules and some laws, we're going to bring in Sheriff Lombardo to talk about his candidacy for governor, his endorsement by PSAN, the Public Safety Alliance of Nevada, as well as the PPA, and how he's going to change the state and look out for law enforcement. All right, everybody. We're here with our boss, Dan and I's boss, a good guy, known him for a long time, our current sheriff, Joe Lombardo. He's running for governor. And as of now, Sheriff Lombardo has our endorsement from the PPA and from the Public Safety Alliance of Nevada. And we're really glad to have you on the show. We haven't had you on here yet, but we wanted to get you here as you were getting toward this process, getting closer to running our state. And so, you know, want to just give you a second to tell everybody kind of who may not know you, who you are, because this podcast goes out to India, Italy. We have a lot of people that have listened to this throughout the world.
I didn't know that.
Worldwide. We can track it.
Oh, you can?
Yeah. Pretty cool. So
I feel a little out of place. I don't have my aviator shirt on.
I asked that, and Steve said you didn't want to match us.
I said, there's no way you want to sit there. And see, I knew that.
I have to wear my fire football shirt.
Yeah, you should have cleat marks on its back if it's a real fire jersey.
There you go. Well, thank you. Welcome, everybody out there in cyberspace and the PPA. Thank you for the invite. And you're right, I haven't done this before, and I'm excited about it. And actually, I'm excited to hear your answers. You know, sometimes I never know what's coming out of your mouth. So, I'm Joe Lombardo. I've been on Las Vegas Metro for going on 34 years. I ran for sheriff back in 2014, was elected, been the sheriff for 7.5 years, the end of my second term. And I had to make a decision what the hell I was going to do, whether I ran for sheriff again or not, or whether I go into the private sector or continue in public service. And my decision was to continue in public service, you know, as a result of what I seen was going up at the state level, and just knowing through my history, leadership, and experience, I could do a better job, you know. And more importantly, what the hell's going on with law enforcement, you know, at the state level and the federal level, and the support for law enforcement and everything else that goes along with it, and to the detriment of our communities. We're seeing crime on the rise and the softening of attitudes towards criminals and everything that goes along with that space. And I know I could do a better job. But let's back it up a little bit. You know, a lot of people don't know me. Obviously, on the department they do, in the Las Vegas community they do, most aspects of the state of Nevada. But if you look outside to what your reach is with this podcast and everything else, it's important for people to know who I am. So I moved here in 1988. My dad was in the Air Force. He was assigned to Nellis Air Force Base. Prior to that, I was born in Misawa, Japan. I'm part, you know, product of a military family. We bounced around every 3 years. until I eventually ended up here in Las Vegas as a sophomore in high school. I did my freshman year of high school in Madrid, Spain. And then came here, went to Rancho High School, graduated, went in the United States Army for a short period of time, got out, deferred my commission with the military to go to ROTC at UNLV, graduated from UNLV, went back in the military, eventually deferred my commission to the Nevada National Guard here locally, and then joined the police department in 88. I did a ride along with a buddy of mine. A lot of people probably won't remember him, but Jim Moses. He had me come do a ride along and I was hooked and decided to apply for the police department. But while during that time, I worked as a civil engineer in LA. And that's what my background was from the university. And then here we are today.
So you started the department in 88. Dan, when were you born?
It's a great year, 88. I'm born in 86 though. So I know where you're getting that. I'm way older than an 88, 2 years on that.
How old are you, Dan?
35.
Oh, you are a youngin'.
Do you
still wear your diapers?
No. Oh, okay. 88, I got rid of those.
when you become 88, that's when the diapers come back.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Now, you used to do spec homes.
Yeah,
you and I've talked about that before. What was the interest in spec homes?
Well, my background is in civil engineering, and my dad was very handy with the the nail and the hammer, and the guy could do basically anything. He could rebuild an engine on your car in a matter of a week. And so he developed my interest in that space in construction. And as you imagine, mathematical engineering, you're interested in that kind of stuff. So Scott Killebrew, who's retired from Metro, was in the spec home space way back then. And he asked me if I would come in and help him be part of it and do it and as both an investment and maybe organize him a little bit. He's probably one of the most disorganized guys you ever meet in your life, but that's what happened. So we ended up forming a partnership and through the process we did two developments and built three spec homes. So in totality I've probably built five spec homes over time, but we've had a lot of success associated with that.
You race?
Yeah, off-road racing.
I don't think many people would think that.
Why?
I just don't think you look like an off-road racer.
What's an off-road racer look like?
Not you. More like JD. He's got the BJ Baldwin look a little bit, and
he does. He looks like he might be his little brother.
Yeah. But how'd you get into racing?
Well, my buddy John Langley. So John Langley owns the Cops Productions. May he rest in peace. He passed away last year. And I met him through the show Cops. I was one of his original, you can't use the word actors, but participants, because we're not actors, as police officers. And I was one of the original Cops as part of the Las Vegas episodes. And as a result of that, we formed a pretty robust relationship. So we were best of friends for, several decades. And then he got into it. He knew a firefighter in LA that was into it, that was his neighbor, and he talked him into off-road racing. And subsequently, John invited me to come out and be part of the pit crew, and then eventually, part of the maintenance crew. And then eventually, I was John Langley's navigator. So, you ride on the right side and you read the GPS during the race. And that lasted for several years. And eventually I said, I'm tired of doing this crap. I'm going to get my own car. And so he helped me in that endeavor. And that's how I got into it. So now I race a trophy spec truck in all the different series, Best in the Desert, Score, Snore, whatever series it may be, or whatever my schedule would be of convenience to do a race. So I haven't really raced much in the past year because of this campaign. I'm running for governor.
Now, can the state hope that you stop racing when you win the governor's seat and hope that their governor doesn't get in a rollover accident? Are you going to put that behind you? Are you going to keep doing it?
No, I really don't know. I don't really know. The demands of the jobs are unknown, but there's got to be some release at some point, right? And what will that release be? And, one of the things I fancy is I'm a fan and a spokesperson for the sport, the off-road racing, especially in the United States and especially in Nevada, so we quite often have to deal with BLM and get the permits to do the races in Nevada. And, you know, they quite often reach out to me and say, hey, what do you think? Is this viable or not? And, you know, being a part of it is all part and parcel to Nevada. So you can say it's part of being a Nevadan, right? Because it happens here in Nevada, and what better than the governor have his name on the side of a truck? Maybe the people get out of the way then, right?
I would like the governor to be an off-road racer. You know, as an avid outdoorsman myself, you know.
Yeah.
So, and that kind of brings us to a subject. You're a busy guy running for governor, being the sheriff. How are you juggling the time between
being sheriff
and running for governor?
It's tough. It's tough. Obviously, you know, you got watchdogs out there making sure you're abiding by the mandates, as far as convoluting the jobs and ensuring that you're abiding by the ethics of the, you know, of candidacy. And you know, what I mean by that is you got to make sure you're doing all the right stuff at the right time for the right reasons all the time. And it's tough. So you got to balance that, because the people voted me to be the sheriff, not the governor, as of yet. And I think I have an obligation to the people to fulfill that, you know, trust in me. And that's why I said I'm not going to resign to run for governor, because I think they deserved me to go through the end of my term, which is December of this year. And so I have to balance that. I have to balance that. And the people that I'm running against have the luxury of just only campaigning. But I think it's important. It helps me in two factions. One is I stay in touch with what's going on here at the police department. Too, it helps me stay in touch with what the hell is bothering people out there and what's important to them in the state of Nevada. And hopefully I can have some influence in both those spaces.
So I can say, as the president of the largest union, your union for your department, that anyone who has any questions, is the sheriff still doing his job? You and I communicate damn near every other day about issues within Metro, things that are coming down the pipe. There's no disengagement. I've often told many people, you're probably one of the smartest guys that I know, that I've dealt with. I'm looking forward to seeing our other candidate, Kevin McMahill, take over as sheriff, because I think you're sharper than him, and I'm going to try and roll a lot past him.
We're excited for that. Sneak some things in.
You know, I think I'm going to succeed. We'll see. Little plug for our endorsed candidate for sheriff, Kevin McMahill. both of you carried a huge number, almost 80% of our polled membership for support, and
that says a lot. Just, you know, going out and getting approval of.
I mean, you're right. You're right. I personally believe that says, you know, a lot. Is the best way to describe it, because no matter what the organization is, police department, no matter what it is, when you're at the top of the food chain and you're the proverbial boss, there's a lot of people that don't like you, right? No matter what decisions you make. And for us to pull, for me in particular, to pull 80% of the vote, is, I think that speaks volumes. And you know what? And kudos to the membership and seeing the benefits of me being the next governor.
And knowing our membership, they don't like the job you're doing. They're going to tell you.
Something. Yeah, exactly.
all right. So another question, it's come up kind of in discussion. So you had a run in with a guy at an event.
Yeah.
A heckler.
We looked at it, and you can chime in your two cents. But from my position, the way it looked was, when I saw that, I told our guys, I can see a guy in Joe that, if he wasn't the current sheriff, he wasn't running for governor, I could see Joe getting right in that guy's face and putting it right back on him and setting him in his place. Whereas with Steve, no offense to him, it looked like he was scared to death and was trying to get out of there as fast as he could. And, you know, I think people in this state, this is still kind of a cowboy state. Mm-hmm. People want to see toughness. I've had that conversation with people about the sheriff. They want to see your sheriff as a tough person. Who's also compassionate.
You're right.
You don't want to have someone that's scared. You don't want to have someone backing down.
You look at it as a problem, right? You have one of the candidates running away scared from the problem, and you have one confronting it, you know? And like I said, I think the people of our state, you know, the off-road race fans and everybody else can get behind somebody who confronts their problems.
Yeah, you know, I've said this on the campaign trail, and you might have COVID.
That's what I was doing.
So I've said this on the campaign trail. more than once, I personally believe Nevada's lost its swagger, you know, and we used to have a cowboy mentality, you know, and rough and tumble type state. And, you know, we take care of our own and conservative values across the board. And I personally believe we've lost that swagger. And that's part and parcel. Another reason why I'm running for governor, I want to bring that back to the state and have people say that no matter where they are, back east in the Beltway, wherever, say Nevada, they speak of that swagger. So.
So you've gotten the endorsement from the PPA.
Yep.
Like we said, what does that mean to you, and what are you going to do with that endorsement going forward in your campaign?
Well, I'm going to speak well of it, and I'm going to speak loud and proud on the basis of it. I think it's very important for people to realize the influence the PPA has in the law enforcement community. And, you know, interesting enough, Steve and I had robust conversations in the last two sessions and the last special session as a result of our relationship and the concern for law enforcement in general and what was coming out of the legislative sessions and what united front we would have in combating bad legislation. And unfortunately, we weren't listened to, and more often than not. And there was a lot of things that passed the governor's desk that was detrimental to law enforcement, detrimental to public safety, detrimental to our communities and to the state. And so for the PPA to still stand tall, even after some of those losses we experienced, and say, hey, we still got to be united, and we think you're the best guy to confront this scourge or this bad direction that we're going, speaks volumes. And PPA being the 800-pound gorilla, you know, I always talk about Metro as the 800-pound gorilla in the law enforcement space in Nevada, and that's by the nature of our size and what we have to deal with our population base. That's not to say anything detrimental about any other police agency. They're fantastic in their own right, but it's just, you know, people look at us for direction. People look at the PPA for direction. And you know, and that's not to say anything derogatory about any other association. I can mention one, but I won't. It speaks volumes. It speaks volumes, and I appreciate wholeheartedly the support.
So I'm gonna take it a little out of order, Dan. So I want to because this one kind of I was a part of. So as a governor, it's your job to gather the lawmakers and keep them on task and drive them. As you said, I sat through sessions and you know, full disclosure, we supported Sisolak when he ran his first campaign, and in true political fashion, he turned on us when things got rough and kind of sold the cops out, in my opinion. But I watched him during the sessions, and one thing, I only saw him in the building once. Conversations with him during the special sessions about guiding his leaders of the political parties. He said, Steve, I can't tell them what to do. My party would cast me out if I started going against their wishes. So I've got to let them do their thing. So go talk to them. Do you think it's more important that the governor is that really lead figure, walking in the building, getting people on task? Because I'll tell you, there were days where people were out doing nothing for hours when bills and when laws could start getting moving and not have to push it to the last minute of the session, which is what happened in the regular session for some bills. That is it the governor's job to keep people on task, to keep them moving, to gather the parties, try and get them to work together, more specifically your own party, to get them moving in a proper direction?
Yes. I mean, there's no ambiguity in there in deciding the answer to that question you presented. Yes, absolutely yes. So the concern is, you know, this part of my platform is this single party rule, right? So the foundation of our government and our republic is, you know, bipartisan, you know, argument, discourse, and then hopefully consensus by communication. And we're all better for it, not one single party. And that's the situation we've been put in here in the state of Nevada. And as a result of that, you alluded to it. You said what the governor had profess to you, you know, the party would cast me out. Was that the words you used? Cast me out. So, and I've said this on the campaign trail, that my personal belief, my personal vision, or my, you know, observations of the current governor is he's a Democrat first and a Nevada second. We have to flip that. You got to be in Nevada first, and then whatever your party may be, second or third or fourth, whatever it may be. But to the crux of the issue up at the legislature is there has to be discussion. There has to be vision provided by the governor on the front end versus trying to catch up on flawed laws that hit your desk and then you're afraid to veto them because of partisanship, because of what the Democratic Party may or may not do to you. So I think it's important for the governor to be out on the front end and have those communications. Hey, listen, don't waste your time or effort, because if that hits my desk, it's a non-starter. Sure. It's going to get vetoed. And you know, and I saw that. I saw that what you described, and other people have professed that to me as the situation that during the legislative session. He's non-communicative. He's hunkered down in his office, and then he'll deal with it as it comes when it hits his desk.
Yeah, so one of our main jobs at the PPA is fighting for paying benefits of our members. And one of the most important benefits they receive is a PERS pension.
Correct.
You're a recipient yourself. Our members want to know if you'll get behind, you know, us and do everything you can to fight against any reform or changes to PERS when you're governor.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of your folks that you talk to on the Republican side may defer from that absolute because, you know, it's PERS and they think it's a social handout or whatever it may be, or it's jealousy because they're not part of the system. But I think for the job that we deal with on a daily basis that most people don't understand,
yeah,
and then how it shortens our life and how it makes it tougher when we do eventually make the decision to retire, is an unknown to them, and they don't understand it. I understand it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what better than a subject matter expert in it and the benefits of it and the bringing quality people into,
yep,
the jobs, right?
That's, you know, what I was going to say next is we're fighting qualified candidates from all the other states, and states have, you know, some better and some worse pensions, and that goes a lot to attract candidates.
Right. You know, it does, especially when you're pulling seasoned candidates from other jurisdictions. I got to be honest with you and frank with you. When I was a young buck rookie, I didn't know what PERS was, sure, you know, and I didn't know was what the hell it meant to me, because I wasn't looking at retirement, you know, day one. And I was, you know, as you mature and you have an understanding of the process, thank God the association was there fighting all along the way, or that way I didn't have to say, shit, I got to make sure that I have longevity in my life. You want to do that anyway, but I don't want to have to go work another job when I decide to retire, if I choose to do that. And even if I did, you knew you were going to have a quality of life when you moved on from the profession. And quite often in our profession, we get confronted by individuals because we're a tourism mecca that say, hey, I'm a retired cop from here or retired cop from there. And you're looking at them and you're like, well, what are you doing here? Well, we had a terrible pension. I had, yep, to keep working. I had to be a security guard here now, or whatever it may be. So you got to have a good pension and a good outlook in the long term for recruiting, for retention, and for family life when you make the decision to retire.
And
for, it's all part and parcel. And so to answer your long-winded answer to your question is 1,000% support. I would not support any chipping away of the process.
Okay.
And I know some of the folks up there have told us, listen, I won't mess with police and fire, but others I will.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important you as the governor to say, listen, understand that is one giant pot of money. You chip away, to your point, from UMC or the teachers, and you think you're going to leave police, fire alone. You're not.
No.
You're going to take away from the fund that is building for everyone. And we know, and you alluded to it, you're a young cop. You don't know about it because it's so far in the future. But your fund contributions are making sure that that officer that did it for 25 years before you is able to stay at home and not have to worry about getting a second job. And for those that say, well, why shouldn't you have to get a second job? Listen, go sit through a summer of unrest, go through the culinary strikes that the folks went through back in the 80s, I believe it was, go through the riots after the Rodney King, go through what we go through on a daily basis.
But Steve, it's bigger than that. Yeah, go through all those. Yeah, those are significant. And you don't actually know in totality what it's done to your psyche or your physical or your emotional state, but it's a daily thing. In law enforcement.
No, for sure.
It's a daily thing for a nurse at a hospital. It's a daily thing for a teacher in a school. And what that puts down on your shoulders, you know, as you go through the processes, you know, for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, I quite often, it's amazing when I see retirees, you know, after they retired and you see them like a year later, they look like they're 15 years younger, right? Because you're pulling that stress off them. And you know, and I'm not poo-pooing anybody else's profession, but there's a lot of stressors out there that people don't understand.
And I don't think a lot of the public is educated on the way our pension system works. And maybe some of our viewers that, you know, these public workers pay for half the pensions themselves out of either straight up out of their paycheck or reductions in their pay. So most of the pension, half of it anyways, is
yeah, that's an unknown, right? Right. That's an absolute unknown. You make a good point. And, you know, people think it's just government welfare, right? And, you know, just like everything we do in police work, there's three sides to the story. And usually people base their opinion off the one side. And so maybe we've done a poor job of communicating that. I don't know, but yeah, there absolutely is three sides to the story.
And for the record, that was the first time in our many podcasts and to our 1.56 million viewers that poo-poo was used in a podcast. The word poo-poo was impressive for our
share. You have 1.56 million viewers?
Did it just go up 1.62? Yeah, 1.62 now.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
No, it's actually like 50.
I thought I was going to talk to like four people.
That's about it.
The sponsorships that are coming in on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to our sponsors, Aquafina. We always appreciate the water.
The Aviators.
Yeah.
The Aviators.
I have on Clark's shoes, and shout out to Clark's as well. So we just grab sponsors. They don't know it, but they get a boost in sales because of what we do.
The check from Moe's Mustache Wax bounced, so I shaved my mustache from the last
May 2020. Use the code half off Moe's Mustache Wax. Staying in this space of the legislature and police reform bills, that was one of our biggest issues in that special session that, you know, we felt here at Metro we did a great job, and even in our state our police officers were doing a great job because of something that we all saw and none of us agreed with that happened in Minnesota. Our legislature took that more as a, hey, we can use this to boost ourselves up, and started coming after our cops. And while we understand that there's always room for growth in police work, anti-cop, far left-wing agenda is pretty clear. How would you combat bad bills from coming through, attacking police, and how well-versed are you in using your veto power when it comes to those if you're a governor?
What do you mean, how well-versed?
I mean, are you afraid to go against a
mass group?
Oh, no.
I've talked about that since day one when I made a decision to run for governor. I said, hey, you know, my opinion, the current governor has lost his veto pen. Can't find it. It's under his desk somewhere.
Well, I think his chief of staff has it, because from everything I've seen, that's who runs the state of Nevada, for the record, is his chief of staff.
But more importantly is I plan to have a robust pen. But you know what? Maybe it's a detriment to say it that way, plan to have a robust veto pen, because hopefully, because of the discussion we had earlier, hopefully you head that off in the front end and, you know, some of those bad bills don't come forward as a result of conversations and communications and reach out across the aisle and deciding that. Because we still don't know whether it's going to be a supermajority or a majority or what that's going to look like moving forward. You know, we keep our fingers crossed in that space, and hopefully we have some changes along the way. But
from my experience in this session, when we're up there, bipartisan bills never have a problem.
Right.
When people, to your point, when they're working together, they really reach out. It's when we see 48 to 30, right, and it's very clear party line. There's a saying, I don't know who I heard it from. I actually think it was Ms. Krasner in the state legislature. And she said, the goal of legislation is to pass bills that stand the test of time, not the test of an election.
Right.
Don't make it to the next cycle where the Republicans or the Dems want to get rid of it. Work together and pass something that will hold up forever, you know? And I think those are the things you won't have to worry about vetoing. It's the, hey, we're going to cram something down because we're the supermajority and we didn't care what the other party said. And we saw that from the PPA side, that there were bills being discussed that our Republican counterparts never got until the day it hit the floor.
Right. You're right. And so to answer your question, Steve, when you said, well, how are you going to address these issues? I'm the subject matter expert. So when you're talking about law, the law enforcement space and whether it's going to hinder a police officer's ability to do the job, whether it's going to hinder public safety in totality because of the adjustment of, you know, misdemeanors versus felonies or thresholds associated with amounts of, say, narcotics or anything that goes across the board, or the lessening of sentencing guidelines on ABCD felonies and all that. Who better than me to know the consequences of ill-conceived legislation? You know, so, you know, quite often legislatures, they're not experts in everything, right? They can't be, nor can anybody else. But if you have somebody that's well situated in the law enforcement space, why not provide them direction on the front end? And why not say, you guys went down the wrong path on this. You didn't consider this. You didn't consider this. There's a lot of unknown, unintended consequences as a result of this legislation that wasn't considered, and prevent it from having to reach a veto pen. But if it does, I'm more than happy to put my signature down on the paper.
And to your point about subject matter experts, most of the bills that were passed in the session, where some of the politicians said that they had law enforcement support, and you know this, I talked to you guys and Chuck Calloway when Chuck was up there, that they said they had law enforcement support. And the truth is that all they talked to were people that were not police officers.
Right.
Chuck got stonewalled on things. We for sure got stonewalled because in the last election season, we went after a main target, Nicole Cannizzaro. She should have been gone. She's still there. It is what it is. But that was going on, that they'd say they had support, but they were talking to the likes of a outside association like NAPSO. And we talked to Rick McCann. That guy's not a cop. You know, and but they platform that and say, we've already talked to law enforcement, so we're good. So it would be good to have an actual expert like you that's worked a shift, pushed a black and white to say, hold on a second, this affects cops. You can't tell a cop they can't use a beanbag round in this scenario, because they need to sometimes. It may not be to save their own lives or somebody. It's somebody else, a citizen on the sidewalk. So I think it's important that you're out there talking to these folks on both sides of the aisle. Right. I mean, you look far left, sometimes you can't get any good information. You look too far right, you can't get any good workers. Right. People need to come together in that moderate middle. And those are the people I think that you can affect when it comes to law enforcement, because the big ticket right now is public safety across the country.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I think law enforcement is the big ticket. And what I mean by ticket is that's the most important issue in the back of people's minds, or even in the front of their minds, you know. I want to feel safe, and currently I do not feel safe. So let's back up to, you know, earlier in this conversation, we were talking about Joe Lombardo's not doing his job. He's not paying attention to the sheriff, and that's why crime's rising. Wake up, people. Wake up. We've actually done a yeoman's job here in the Las Vegas Valley. You know, total violent crime was down 11% last year, but total crime was up 5%. But they're saying, oh, well, he's not paying attention. Crime's out of control. No, it is. And it's out of control across the United States. And because of the lack of support, you know, the defund the police rhetoric and everything else that goes along with it, they believe were, you know, the draconian measures that are in the prison systems. And so bring it a little bit for back home. Let's look at California real quick. AB 109, Proposition 47, you know, that was the reclassification of several felony crimes into misdemeanors. The depopulation of the prison system to balance the state budget, and they're paying the price now. You know, so they recently said that's going to the ballot, both of those measures, for repeal, because they're seeing the detriment of the crime. Right? They're seeing cities being overtaken, and basically a lack of you know, I'll use the word anarchy, to where people are moving out, businesses are closed and not reopening, and usually what happens in California happens here at some point, right? Because, well, especially at the governor's seat, where he waits to find out what Newsom's doing before he makes a decision. But the you know, we have to pay attention to that. And if you have to have somebody that speaks with a knowledge base associated with it to make a difference for people to listen to it.
So it's funny, shout out to my current community college, Eastern Gateway Community College, Go Educators, where I've just recently gotten my...
Who are you pointing at?
The cameras. They know where I'm at.
Oh, yeah. They know where you're at?
The Eastern Gateway watches this every week. But I recently got my degree in criminal justice. And one of the things that resonated in the classes was deterrence. Every time someone does something, there's got to be a deterring factor for it, whether it's directly related to them or a general deterrence. We keep taking laws off the books, and you look up in like Oregon and places like that where they're trying to make it where if you have crack cocaine on you, it could be a ticket and have a good day. You know, you keep emboldening criminals to do criminal actions and have no follow through. We look at last legislative session before 2021, they passed a bill that made it where it's automatic probation for auto burglaries. Doesn't matter what your other priors were. You can go breaking all the cars you want. The first time you're caught, it's just going to be probation. Well, we can't do anything about it.
Well, it slipped right in our own backyard. A recent tragedy where a family of seven was killed by somebody going 110 miles an hour. And, you know, the media covered it, and they're looking at the judges, and they're looking at the police department, but they don't look at the lawmakers who just decriminalized traffic. And when the criminals see that, okay, now the lawmakers decriminalize that, that emboldens them to drive faster, to break the law. And, you know, inadvertently things like that happen. And the public needs to be educated on that. Is that something you're looking to, you know, combat with your...
Absolutely. I mean, you can look at, you can easily, well, it's not easy. The legislature, you have to depend on them. That's why communication is important to repeal some of those flawed legislative ideas that, you know, made it into law. And, you know, here's a perfect example. They codified in law the habitual criminal enhancement, right? And so we all know we grew up with three strikes, you're out. And then they determined that was unconstitutional. It was too draconian, I guess the word I would use, in that space. You know, people were being put back into prison for minor offenses, right? I always say in that thing, well, don't commit the offense, no matter what size of offense it is, right? You know, it's easy to prevent that from happening. But in this space, they moved the three strikes up to five strikes, okay? And you can't use the felony they got arrested for as one of the strikes. So you have to have five previous strikes in the violent crime space to qualify for this enhancement, which is, I believe, 5 years.
And not everybody gets it. It's only if they petition for it.
Right, exactly. Only if you petition for it. And the judges still have discretion. Mm-hmm. That's written in the law, whether they even want to consider it, right? And then the you know, the big bang is seven strikes. You have to have seven strikes to feel the pain, which would be 10 to life on an enhancement. And if you look at the court records, you don't see them doing it, right? And so because they give them the ability to do it, and you should remove that, even that ability. So it's very frustrating for me to see that, knowing the business we're in. And you are exactly right. Who gets the blame?
Yep.
It isn't the lawmakers, right? It isn't the judge that signed the search warrant. It's us. It's us. We get the blame. Wait. There's a trilogy in the justice system. It's not just police standing on their own. And part of that, the best part of that, as the governor, I can educate people on that and have them have an understanding of it.
Yeah, there is a lot of unfair blame placed at the feet of the people who enforce the law. Listen, even at the DA's office, the ones that try cases, they can only do so much in the scope and confines of the laws that are on the books. And if the legislature
and the resources
continue, for sure, right? But if they continue to soften crime, you know, I mean, you and I remember when a seed of marijuana was a felony.
Yeah.
The cutoff for a grand larceny was $250. Now I think if you steal something for $50,000, you're not a felon yet. I'm kidding, but it's $1,250. That you can walk into a Walmart and steal two TVs and not commit a felony.
Right.
You know that. What
was built on top of that? Can't arrest either.
Yeah.
Citation.
Yeah.
Give them a citation.
Yeah. Or civil offense, which will, I'm sure, if they had their way, they'll continue to move towards more civil.
Right.
Offenses.
I mean, that's why you see, you know, Neiman Marcus and Dillard's and CVS Pharmacy and Walgreens in California shutting the doors. It's the, you know, they can't afford the price of doing business. I mean, it's very frustrating for folks to see that happening.
So, Steve, I'll let you ask that question, but I'm going to throw in the wild card question, which was the second most asked question by our membership. Uh-huh. And you being a, you know, outdoorsman, I'm sure you spent a lot of time on your thoughts on who you're going to appoint to the wildlife commissioner seat. So what are your thoughts on that? And is my name on the top of the list for wildlife commissioner?
You know what? You see, you asked me who I was thinking about. Now you put me on the spot. So no, To be honest with you, I'm not saying not a chance for you. What I'm saying, I haven't thought about it yet. And I think it's important for me to keep my eye on the ball currently and obtaining the seat before we go down that path. But granted, you're always going to have ideas in the back of your mind, like chief of staff and different committees and commissions as you move through the process. But my eye on the ball currently is getting elected.
Which is the right thing. I've got city councilman Ray Spencer continuing to blow me up for something. And you're still his boss, so maybe you can say, hey, doing a podcast, leave us alone. So last thing, we do appreciate you being on here, Joe. We know you're busy, but huge police versus fire charity football games coming up.
Yep.
It's going to be bigger than the Flint, Michigan Mega Bowl out of Michigan. It's going to be very, very big. Now, your take with the odds makers posting, and I think the most recent line at stations was 35, that Metro was a favorite. Do you take fire with the 35 points, or do you take the police and give up 35 and think that we're going to win that game by more than 35?
Paint me in a corner. I'll stay with the police.
That's what I like to hear.
And I'd like to thank you, Joe, for sponsoring the terrible towels for the game.
Yes.
Oh yeah, I got to get you checked, don't I?
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. We know you're good for it.
What about the mustache wax people?
Their checks bounce. So yeah, I trimmed it.
We used the wrong year for the 50% off. Again,
you know what? This is going to be really cool, this football game, because I'm a little pissed off at Metro and the cops, to include county fire, because we just had this blood drive, this battle of the blood drive over at T-Mobile, and those guys allowed all their academy recruits to leave their classroom and get down there in line so they could beat us in the blood donation. So we got to figure out a way to stack the deck on this.
Having the fire department letting the recruits go down there, some people say unfair. However, they went out and supported the community for a good cause. We have a lot of good charities, our Law Enforcement Assistance Fund, fires, they're trying to build a memorial wall, and then the Children's Heart Foundation, which they paid for that heart wing and sunrise, and they pay for the medical costs of local children with heart defects or heart disease. And we got as a department, it's awesome that we got behind these good causes and helping out our community and the community charities.
And Joe, you're going to be there to toss the coin for us, right?
Yep. I'm a little nervous though about the age of some of the players. And just so the taxpayers are going to be paying attention, and we're not going to be doing any workman's comp crap.
We have waiver.
When you pull your hammy.
We have waivers signed out the wazoo. We know what people's sick time banks look like.
And we only let athletes play in this game, not people like me or Steve either.
Said, Steve, so you're playing. I said, no, I want to win. We got a guy that played linebacker for the Ravens. We got a kid that was a quarterback at UNLV. We got wide receivers that were D1 wide receivers. It's going to be a
kicker.
We do. So it's funny you say that. JD was just out at practice last night, and we said, hey, to end practice, you got to make a 50-yard field goal. Had 5 yards on it. Kid made a 55-yard field goal.
Really?
Off the turf. Where's he? No work? Block. I don't know where he's working at. I think maybe at the jail. But it was amazing. I mean, great kick, great angle.
Speaking of that, so are you guys going to quantify or qualify their ability, their eligibility
for the other team?
Yeah,
they can take who they want.
They got to be on the fire department.
No, I agree, right? But if they feel they need to cheat to do that,
it's a gentleman's agreement.
They probably should.
I don't want to have to walk into
we're going to do you proud. You're not going to
the gym and see this guy working at the gym. I said, oh, wait a minute, I thought you were a firefighter. Oh no, I just friends with the firefighters.
They can bring out who they want. It's not going to matter. And actually, I think JD, we've got right now. We'll just cut away to the video. If we can't get it right now, we'll just cut it in. But the video of their practice that was sent to us, and we'll let that run through, and then we'll add it in, but they look good. They look really good. But we appreciate you coming on, Joe. Know you're busy. We know that your main focus is still the job you're doing, which is sheriff. And no one can attest to that better than me and Dan and the guys at the PPA, because we know you're engaged, but you're also taking your own time on weekends, evenings. I know how many trips you've driven up to Winnemucca and Reno. Every time I talk to you on a weekend, it's
great. Scene.
I'm up here, and
hey, my sister lives here. Relax.
I love Northern.
I'm serious. He is genuinely someone that shouldn't be in Vegas.
I'm planning a vacation in Ely.
Yeah,
as we speak.
And so, we appreciate you coming on, Joe. Appreciate the time, and we look forward to supporting you. Hopefully, seeing a lot more of you. Some events for the PPA, trying to fundraise for you and get things going, because it is our goal. It is one of our explicit goals, is to get Sisolak out of office and get you elected. So hopefully,
we actually saw Sisolak the other day.
We did at the airport.
At the airport. He ran away from
He
just,
had it
just like the heckler.
I had my back the badge shirt on. He came from behind us. Adela pointed him out, and then all of a sudden he had a fake phone call. Yep. I'm pretty sure while the phone was to his ear, it rang. So we knew it was a fake call, and they ran away from us as quick as they could. So same look he gave to that guy at the restaurant that scared him so greatly. But we do appreciate you, Joe. Love to have you back as we get closer. Definitely after you win, maybe we'll go live from the session next year.
And, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll let me in the governor's mansion.
Now you're pushing
God,
it.
God, son of a bitch.
All right. You're pushing it now.
See, that tells you he's not pandering, right? A pander would have said.
I'll let you on the curtilage.
We'll do it from the Wildlife Commissioner's office.
There you go. Bingo. All right. Sheriff Lombardo, governor candidate for the state of Nevada, we appreciate you. And we'll move on to our closing on the show. Okay. So from talking to the Sheriff Lombardo, it's very clear to me his reaction. You are number one on the list. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
I was a little heartbroken by his reaction. I don't know, if he's playing hard to get with this, or if he doesn't want any of the other candidates to feel let down before I officially commit. But I was expecting job's yours, you know.
Well, I got a text from him. Says, Steve, Dan should have known. Don't ask that. He's my guy, but I can't announce that yet. So,
well, thank you, Joe.
I get appreciate it. That. He did appreciate, and he just showed me a pic. He went to Moe's Mustache Wax. And he used the 2020 May code. So it's still not working, he says, but we'll figure it out.
It might be 22.
It could be. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why it's not working.
Maybe.
In closing, we'll be doing some more podcasts here. We've got a great opportunity next month at Police Week. We're going to be down there. We're bringing Roland Seven and the crew down there to come do some podcasts, do some filming. We are going to show you all for the first time what it's like to be in DC when the Police Unity Tour comes in, when the Candlelight Vigil, when we're at the Top Cops Award ceremony, when we're recognizing one of our own, Officer Swanger, who's gave his life and passed away in the line of duty. You're going to get to see all of that and some good video shots from our team at Roland Seven. So we're going to keep bringing on some political folks through the political season here. We're going to keep bringing you some good information. We are also going to bring you some more stuff on the police fire charity football game. Get involved, buy tickets, get a part of the raffle, come out, watch the police absolutely destroy the fire team. I keep saying it, my counterparts in fire, and you know it, we've been on calls with them. Oh, you guys just better hope you can make it through the game. They're in trouble. Mm-hmm. There could be some criminal charges brought against our defensive guys for the way they're going to handle those fire guys. And they're not going to be able to hold short like they do on calls for service.
Nope. It's evident with the footage that you guys just saw of them practicing. It's going to be ugly.
That has scared some of our guys. I'm not going to lie. There's some nervousness from that video clip, but we're going to move through it. We're going to get to the game. We want everybody out there. We want everyone to support your guys. We want you to support Leaf. We want you to support PFFN. We want you to support the Children's Heart Foundation. The only way you can do that is buying tickets, coming out to the event. So we for sure will see you at the Police Fire Charity Game.
May 7th,
7 p.m. Bonanza High School. Great people there. Coach Keith out there is doing everything he can for us, bending over backwards, lending us the fields. It's going to be an event. It's not just going to be a football game. We're making this thing an event.
Yeah, and by coming out and taking part and buying some concessions there, you're also going to help out Bonanza High School.
Yep.
And their athletic program. So a lot of great community charities are going to be helped here.
And I myself am a graduate of Bonanza High School, and so it's special to me to be able to go back there. I mean, I'm only 27 right now, so it was only 9 years ago that I graduated, but it's going to be fun to go back. So till we meet again on the next podcast, Aviators, thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
As usual, Moe's Mustache Wax, we appreciate you being a sponsor. And
it's gone, by the way. Well, Steve said it looked absolutely horrible, especially on camera, and I had to cut it. My wife was nagging me for months, and then she was kind of upset and heartbroken that I shaved it for you and not for her.
Well, the truth is I swapped your Moe's mustache wax with Nair, and it fell off. So I apologize, pal, but you look sharper this way than you did with the mustache. So from us, be safe. Always go out there, have each other's backs. Donate to Leaf, and we'll see you on the next one. 111, 110.